This podcast is sponsored by the Academy of Music and Science, Swindon. For more information, go to www.academyofmusic.ac.uk.
Order! Order! Please be seated for Pancast Movie Court.
Hello and welcome to episode one of a brand new Pancast podcast. This is Movie Court, where we put our guests' beloved and unloved films on trial for you. Dear Pancasters, you are the jury. Here is how Movie Court works. Our guest has chosen a film dear to their hearts, and our very own Neil will fight against their case. We will have opening statements from each side very shortly, followed by some evidence in the shape of some audio clips. Each side will cross-examine each other with deep, soul-searching questions, and we end with each side's closing statement. Then it will be up to you, dear Pancaster, to cast your verdict by Twitter, Facebook or email, guilty or not guilty. Now, court is in session. Both the defence and prosecution have their cases prepared. So first, for the prosecution, let's introduce our very own Pancast prosecutor, the solicitor of celluloid, the barrister of blockbusters, it's Neil!
Good day, Your Honour.
Good day. I'm not Your Honour, I'm just the mediator here, Neil. Okay, you don't have to give me any airs and graces.
All right. I won't curtsy then.
Don't you? You wouldn't dare in those tight trousers. How are you today?
I'm very well. I'm looking forward to this.
Are you fully prepared?
I have all my facts, ma'am. Just the facts.
Just the facts. And are you briefed? Do you have briefs?
Well, I've got briefs.
Yeah. You have briefs, not boxes.
Well,
okay, so you're all prepared and ready.
Let's just say I'm suitably covered.
That's good. And ready to go.
Ready to go. Firing on all cylinders.
Lovely. So we shall now introduce our guest for the defence. It's Laura.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. And are you prepared?
I am extremely prepared. More prepared than I've ever been before in my life.
Goodness me, that is worrying. Neil, I think you've got it up against you tonight, mate.
I hope so.
Right, Laura, if you would like to tell us...
Oh, it starts.
If you would like to tell us the film that you are bringing to Movie Court.
The film I would like to defend is Love Actually.
That is a wonderful film. And I've actually got some facts about Love Actually, which I will tell you about now, which I'm sure you already know.
Okay.
But these are the facts. It was released in 2003. Yes, you both agree with that?
Yeah.
That's good.
That's correct.
Written and directed by Richard Curtis. Starred such stars. It was an action-packed, star-filled movie.
If you were to list them, it would probably take you about half an hour.
It will, but I'll list a few of them.
Go for it.
It had such stars as Hugh Grant, Colin Firth, Keira Knightley, Andrew Lincoln, Liam Neeson, Alan Rickman, Bill Nighy, and it also had Martine McCutcheon in it as well. So it had, you know, major stars and a few.
This was a moment.
Bless her heart. Did she appear in any other films? I'm not sure whether she did or not.
Who are you talking about?
Martine McCutcheon.
That bird off EastEnders.
That bird off EastEnders.
And the singer of Perfect Moment.
And that was it.
That's it, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and then the face of
I should have really checked
Activia
to see what
yogurt.
That's the one.
Oh, that's it. Yes,
that was her career defining moment.
She was known as Plumpy in the film as well.
I know.
Yes,
which I'm sure I'll come on to.
I missed that fact. I never had that fact. It was nominated for 2 Golden Globes, and it made $246,942,017 worldwide from a budget of only $40 million.
Can you do that in pounds for me?
No.
Okay.
That's a lot of dollars.
That's a lot of dollars, and I would say that was a hit. So that was 2 thumbs up.
Although, to pay that cast, it must have cost them a few bob.
Well, that would have been out of the 40 million. So it made...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it... That
that's
was profit.
That's the budget. Yeah, so it made 200 million profit. I suppose if you take away what the studio would have made and all stuff like that. But yeah.
And the publicity,
Yeah, and it was the most rented DVD in UK in 2004. Those are your facts for Love Actually. So I'm going to get rid of that bit of paper
now.
So now, here we go. We get into the meat. Ooh. The meat and 2 veg of Movie Court. So, just hear the gavel there. We are now going to go in for the guest's opening statement. So, Laura, can you please defend Love Actually?
Okay. I think Love Actually is one of the best movies ever made because it's got everything anybody could ever want from a film. It's got a bit of drama, it's got a bit of comedy, it's romance, and it's also a Christmas film. And basically, it's all rolled into one. It's probably got more famous people in it than any film I can think of. There are exceptionally touching moments when you can physically see the pain in some of the actors' faces, and also some of the most funny moments of a film I've ever seen as well. I think that the film's director, Richard Curtis, is an incredibly talented man. I think that's pretty much my opening statement of why I think it's one of the best films ever made. Oh, actually, I'd like to add to it. I've just thought of something. The other thing that's brilliant about Love Actually is it's got so many different scenes in it and so many different storylines, and yet it all still works beautifully, I think. It still makes a film and you can still follow along on all the storylines. Some are a bit ridiculous, but that's why it's so funny. So that's my opening statement as to why it's one of the best films.
And quite a strong opening statement there. Neil, you're looking a little bit flustered.
No. I would like to bring to the jury out there listening.
Yes.
That I would like you to take into account why I'd like to prosecute and say that Love Actually isn't a very good film.
Okay.
That the people think it is. In fact, I would go so far as to say it's crap.
Okay. Don't mince your words,
no.
Neil. Niels?
Because of that, all it is I want you to take into account of all that saccharine schmaltzfest that plays along with all the cliches in the film, and I will prosecute and tell why later on. But just listen carefully to my points, please.
Okay, and that is your opening statement?
That is it. That's all I want to bring, because I don't want to release too much yet.
That's not like you, Neil.
No.
Normally you are releasing all over the place. Even though this is a court of Pancast law.
So basically, Neil, your statement is, it's crap.
Well,
that was it.
I would just, it's the saccharine schmaltz that really bothers me. And I've got a load more points that I will make. But the statement is, my opening statement, of just that it's not the good film that people seem to think it is.
Okay.
And I will present the reasons why as we get on.
So Laura's come in with the angle of giving facts about the film and saying that this, that and the other. You just come out basically with a tarted up statement of it's shit.
Well, basically, but I will present the facts, but otherwise,
okay.
I don't want to release it all at once.
You're not shooting your load too soon, are you? No, you're
no,
just
I will,
tickling
I've got
it
all in
bit.
Points of exactly why.
Okay.
There's no point repeating myself.
Whereas Laura's gone straight in there with the... Okay.
Oh no, not yet. I've still got some in me.
I feel like we should be putting a porn film on trial rather than Love Actually.
Oh,
Love
well,
Actually.
I'll talk about a bit of porn later because there's
Lovely.
Porn in the film, isn't there?
There is. There is. That would be interesting. People will be riveted now that Laura will be talking
if
about
If anybody's
porn.
Never watched it before, they'll be like, quick, get it on.
Yeah. I forgot there was porn in it. I'm going to have to definitely watch it again.
Gavin and Stacey. What's her name? Stacey,
well,
isn't
that,
she?
That bird off Gavin and Stacey's in it, isn't she?
That's
as a
right.
porn star, yeah. Anyway,
isn't it
Martin Freeman, yeah.
Yeah, from The Office, that bloke from The Office.
And that's
and The Hobbit.
Sherlock.
And The Hobbit.
And Sherlock.
Okay. Right, okay. I've got a few little clips that I'm going to play you as evidence.
Excellent.
Okay. So the first clip, one of the famous things from the movie is obviously Bill Nighy's version of Love Is All Around.
Yep.
Which
Love
was Christmas.
Is all around.
Yeah, wasn't it Christmas Is All Around or something like that?
Yeah, Christmas Is All
Around. That's it.
And then he keeps getting it wrong.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I've got a little clip here from when he's in the radio station.
So, Billy, welcome back to the airwaves. New Christmas single cover of Love Is All Around.
Except we've changed the word love to Christmas.
Yes. Is that an important message to you, Bill?
Not really, Mike. Christmas is a time for people with someone they love in their lives.
And that's not you?
That's not me, Michael. When I was young and successful, I was greedy and foolish, and now I'm left with no one, wrinkled and alone.
Wow. Thanks for that, Bill.
For what?
Well, for actually giving a real answer to a question. Doesn't often happen here at Radio Watford, I can tell you.
Ask me anything you like, I'll tell you the truth.
The best shag you ever had?
Britney Spears.
Wow.
No, only kidding. She she was rubbish.
And even a snort there as well. A little bit of a snort.
See, Neil, you laughed then. You laughed.
I will present this straight away. I'm not going to put anything in my prosecution about Bill Nye because it's Bill Nye.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
He is so brilliant,
yeah,
he's
I can't.
Good.
I can't.
That's fair enough. the next clip we've got is old Hugh Grant pretending to be Prime Minister. Now, was he trying to be Tony Blair?
Well, it's the timing of the film came out just as... Was Tony Blair just elected? Or, oh, no, I'll tell you what. It was Tony Blair versus George Bush at the time.
Hmm.
And I definitely think it was supposed to be Tony Blair versus George Bush.
Because he does make a mention of the people... Oh, yeah, the family that were here before us was the teenagers and the scary wife, which obviously must have been about... Tony Blair. Mm. So, yeah, very... But obviously he's modelled on the young, good-looking... Is Hugh Grant good-looking? Would you say he's good-looking?
Yes, definitely, he is.
Okay, he's not my type.
Yeah, Hugh,
This is when Hugh meets Lumpy, or whatever you called her.
Plumpy.
Plumpy?
Plumpy.
Plumpy.
And this is Natalie. She's new, like you.
Hello, Natalie.
Hello, David. I mean, sir. Shit, I can't believe I've just said that. And I've gone and said shit. Twice. I'm so sorry, sir.
It's fine. You could have said fuck and then we'd have been in real trouble.
Thank you, sir. I did have an awful premonition I was going to fuck up on my first day. Oh, piss it.
So again, I laughed at that bit. I'm not a big fan of Hugh Grant, I have to say, but... That is funny.
It's just brilliant. It's stuff like that all the way through. Like, nothing too, like, massively... What's the word? You know, the scenes aren't ridiculous and over the top. Or, well, there is one scene ridiculous and over the top is when that tall bloke gets his birds in America and they have a threesome. But other than that bit...
That's ridiculous. That never happens, surely.
But the other stuff is like, I'm likely to have gone into work on the first day and said fuck by accident.
That's what, to the Prime Minister?
Yeah, probably. I did in a job interview once. I said fuck.
Really?
Yeah.
And look where you are now. Goodness me.
But the feedback was, it was an interview for Dyson actually, and they gave me feedback and they said, yeah, in your interview you swore, so in the next one, because I did get a second interview, we went, could you try not to swear, please?
And in what context did you swear?
And I went, oh shit, I'm so sorry.
There you go.
I think I must have just said shit, but that was enough for them.
It's Dyson C. They like things clean.
Hey,
that was very quick.
I haven't got the ba-dum-tsh on here. Okay, right. The next one we've got is one that I find the most disturbing of all in the film. When Hugh Grant's looking at a picture of Margaret Thatcher.
You have this kind of problem? Yeah, of course you did, you saucy minx.
Saucy minx. No, I think that's enough to condemn the film. Just with that one piece of evidence.
My argument is won. Good night.
And you mentioned Colin that went to America. This one starts a little bit loud, so it's quite a long clip.
Shag Highway, heading west. Farewell, failure. America, watch out! Here comes Colin Frizzle.
And he's got a big nose.
I love that bit.
And I love that bit so much that I actually made...
And he's got a big nose.
I thought I'd save that. Because that could come in handy.
And he's got a big nose.
It just completely, like, I don't know... You know when people say, oh, what's your favourite film? I'm a genuine believer sometimes that people's favourite films are a lot to do with the circumstances at the time of their life.
Definitely.
So I had recently had my heart broken by my first love when I watched this film back in 2003. And it really brought me up. Like, I was really down and quite low. And I remember watching this and I remember thinking, oh, this is brilliant. And also it was literally released I think it was 3 weeks before Christmas, so the countdown felt very apt and things. And it just completely appeals to my sense of humour. Like, every single clip then, I'm still laughing. I must have watched the film about 20 times.
And I think that Laura is the perfect lawyer here. She is tugging on the jury's heartstrings.
Hell yeah.
Look at that, bringing in the fact that it was a love lost.
Yep.
You've got a real tough job tonight, Neil. Really have.
Opening of the film, I'm going to bring a point straight away, right? That Love Actually, like I said before, isn't actually a proper movie, but a glib supercut of barely formed characters and rom-com cliches. Okay?
Okay.
Then to my holiday hoo-ha with a mob of actors you know and love from far better films. Right. And it's set in London. We know it's set in London. And it looks like a tourist video of London. It's not the London I know and been to many times, but hey, we'll let that go. But the big problem I have is Hugh Grant's voiceover at the beginning and the shameless pandering references to 9/11, which I did have a problem with.
Okay.
When he says, when the planes hit the Twin Towers, as far as I know, none of the phone calls from the people on board were messages of hate or revenge. They were messages of love.
Oh.
What the fuck?
Well, that was
it's
going to
be, isn't it? Well, yeah. Of course it's true, but yeah. That's shameless in pulling on the heartstrings. And I will just present that now and just say, naughty boys and girls.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, because you meant it made light of a massive tragedy.
It could have been, but I didn't like the whole bringing in the 9/11 aspect of that. I really found that a bit of a problem. With me.
Okay. I can. That's actually quite a valid argument. Although I liked that when I watched it, I've never thought of it like that before, how it brings light to something so drastic. Because I'm sure if that happened in this country, there probably would have been a bit more like, hang on a minute, you can't say that about that. So, yeah, maybe. Maybe you're.
And to be fair, I mean, now. Probably the wrong way of putting it, but 9/11 seems fair game now. People are making films about it.
Yeah.
People, it's even in comedy routines and stuff like that. When that came out, that was only a couple of years.
It's not the fact that they mentioned, it's in the context of how they mentioned it. That's where I had the problem. I mean, we shouldn't shy away. It happened.
Yeah.
Of course we can talk about it. And, you know, I'm even going to defend if there's a joke to be made about it, as long as it's in sort of taste of what happened. Do you see what I mean? I never stopped free speech. But I found that quite offensive because why would people ring when they're about to die and say, oh, I hate you, and that sort of thing? And they're not going to, are they? If they're going to make a phone call, of course it's going to be, I'm about to die, I love you, bye.
Although I would like to point out that the point it was trying to put across was the fact that, you know, when people know they're about to die, they are going to want to love, you know, and they want to share that love. And the whole film is about love, and love is all around us.
Absolutely.
It is about love, actually.
So it was just putting it in, you know, that's the context of the film.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Stay away from the 9/11 bit, maybe.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Which sort of like, I really feel like I shouldn't do this now after you're talking about 9/11, but I thought, with that big knob thing, I thought it goes well with this. Listen.
Yeah, I really fancy Patrick Swayze.
And he's got a big knob.
That works perfectly, isn't it? As a twofer there. So that's good. That's going to be my new ringtone. That is there. Right, so we'll move on. Order in court. We're now going to go for the cross-examining. So, as Laura, you are the guest. I believe you have a couple of questions to cross-examine Neil.
So, Neil.
Oh, that was even done. I felt like you was a proper lawyer then. That was fantastic. You weren't even looking at him. That was amazing. That was like something out of LA Law or something like that.
I was scared.
That was amazing.
I did a law AS level.
Right.
In the, you know, when you're sort of 17, you're thinking about what to do. I thought, yeah, I'd quite fancy being a lawyer.
Yeah.
But I was shit at it.
Right. But the way you did that then, all you needed were like the glasses. And the way you did it, you were looking down and you went, so Neil, then you'd have looked up over the glasses. That would have been amazing.
So Neil, as I was building this case, my nipples stood out on end when I realised just how epic this film was, which is always a good sign.
Isn't
anyway,
it just?
I'd like to find out from you, other than the fact that you think it's crap and what you earlier said about the opening credits in the airport, what exactly is it that you think is crap about it? Can you perhaps give me some pointers?
Right. Well, I can present this across, and each one, hopefully, you can then tell me why I'm wrong. Maybe okay. We could go for it like this, because okay. I've written all mine as bullet points, so we'll go for it like this. I bring to you and I question the way the message scenes are about taking the perils of taking people you love for granted and not seizing the day. The film is. Like Emma Thompson. The bit where she's quietly sobbing to both sides now, the song. When she learns husband Alan Rickman is cheating on her with his secretary. And then we've got the lonely Laura Linney losing her shot at her cute co-worker because she has to interrupt their date to calm down her institutionalized psychotic brother. So she gets the downer of a storyline, yet she still has to show gratuitous boobage. There's a problem with me.
Okay.
So we'll start there.
I don't think I really understand them.
I'm just saying that these are points that I had issues with. And I want to say why.
You had issues. So why did you have issues with those?
Just that...
You lost me at boobage, to be perfectly honest.
I just had issues with the way that they were portrayed. Like Emma Thompson, she had to just suck it and... Hang on, I'll reword that. I mean, she didn't really get... It's not the way I like to see her treated. Emma Thompson, for Christ's sake.
But is that because it's Emma Thompson?
No, just the whole character I had issues with. It goes on to then say that, you know, I found a lot of the characters, like there was just two examples there, were sketchily drawn and edited.
Well, that's interesting because I have actually had those two scenes particularly that you're talking about were on my favourite part right. of the movie, because it's, you know, most of the film is very funny and it's quite, well, there is a really sad scene, obviously, where the guy is at his wife's funeral. And his stepson, Daniel, is sort of talking to his dad about, I know I should be grieving, but I'm just hopelessly in love. And what's more, you know, painful than being in love? Other than that bit, the most two moving parts for me is Emma Thompson's bit where she realises she's being cheated on. And right at the end where Laura Linney is clearly more devoted to her brother than her co-worker. And I just think that actually that scene with Emma Thompson sobbing is far more realistic than most stuff that you get in films, because she had her kids there. She wasn't going to go and confront her husband in front of the children just before they go out to a play. And I think that that was probably what most women would have done in that situation. And that was why, for me, it was incredibly moving, because she just had to, as you say, suck it up. But later on in the film, he's gone away, hasn't he? And he's obviously come back. And you can tell that, well, it's never revealed properly. It could go one of two ways, but you can tell that they've been apart or separated for some time. So I think it kind of gave a bit of a hint of actually this was talked about probably later. So that I actually think that point in particular is, I would think, the absolute opposite. Because I think it was one of the highlights of the film. It made me absolutely bawl my eyes out at that point.
Okay. And have you got another question for the prosecution?
So, cast-wise, surely you can't argue that it's one of the best castings of all time.
But I've... I think it is a great cast. I'm not questioning, or I'm going to deny, actually, that the cast isn't good. No, it's fine, the cast. But there's many other ensemble pieces that can be... that are better. A different type of film. We could go to Shortcuts.
Right.
Magnolia. Okay. Films like that where casts are brought into a better sort of story. So I haven't got an issue with
you
the
You do
cast.
Agree with Laura, her point yeah. that it is
it's got a
very
a good
cast.
Yeah, there's no argument there with me at all.
Okay, that's fine. Over to the prosecution then, Neil. How would you like to cross-examine Laura? What
right.
questions do you have?
Can I just have a minute to... My eyesight must be really bad.
Did you, while he's looking, right?
Yes.
Did you know that Richard Curtis founded Comic Relief?
Yes, I did.
I didn't.
Didn't you know?
No, I Googled it.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know that he's obviously...
Big up on him.
Yeah, fair play to him. And obviously he was Blackadder and...
Yeah, Four Weddings and a Funeral and Bridget Jones's Diary and Notting Hill and Mr. Bean and Vicar of Dibley. Yeah, I looked him up on the old...
And he's married to...
Google it.
He's married to Googlette.
No.
He's married to Emma Freud. Have you heard of Freud?
No.
Oh, for they. What did you go for?
I don't know.
Right, hang on. Right,
oh, I've got
the
bit.
The prosecution is ready.
I tried to split all my notes, so I didn't have it all in one long bit. And I've somehow moved bits around. That's why I was getting a bit confused. Right, go back to the Alan Rickman, the Emma Thompson storyline, right?
Yes.
First of all, with that, you're falling back on the old married man has a midlife crisis and sleep with secretary storyline, yeah? Mm-hmm. Plot. And if they're going to do it, you've got to make it interesting and make it a lot better than the million times you've seen it before. And the only interesting person in that is probably Emma Thompson. The secretary is the walking doodle of a vamp and sort of character that we've seen a million times. And Alan Rickman's Harry is scowly, and I wrote, weirdly prim and so impenetrable aloof that it's hard to give a crap about what he does or doesn't do with either woman. Some advice, though. Remember, Rickman was in another movie that became a holiday classic. He's a great actor, and we shall say something a little bit called Die Hard. Do you remember Die Hard?
Yes, we do remember Die Hard.
So he was great in that, and I just thought he was awful in...
Harry Potter.
Yeah, there's another one.
Yeah.
And going, sort of linking it to Love Actually, if we link the two, there's a lot more storytelling in the first half an hour of Die Hard than there is in the whole Love Actually movie.
Right, okay. And the question?
I just wanted to... that was just back to the Emma Thompson bit.
Right,
that's
okay.
Another sort of thing that I was thinking about on that.
Well, but, you thought that Alan Rickman, his performance was...
really bad. And just the whole storyline, it just wasn't, you know, the scorn, you know, the affair and everything, it just wasn't... how shall I word it? Originally done for me.
Okay.
I've seen it a million times before. It's just money for old rope.
Okay. I would say, though, one of the very funniest bits of the film is when old Atkinson is boxing up the necklace that he's bought for his mistress with the, would you like a sprig of holly, sir?
You wanted it gift wrapped, he says. Yes.
Right, but I could come back with that, actually.
All right.
We could talk about the Mr. Bean bullet.
Yeah.
You know, the belaboured comedy bit in the film, where I just thought it was Rowan Atkinson and expected, you know, where he wraps the expensive necklace that Harry will be given to the soon-be mistress in exchange for sex.
clinical, Neil.
Yeah.
That's very
clinical. That's what he was doing it for,
well,
wasn't
it?
So we're all supposed to be rolling in the aisles at Rowan Atkinson's funny attention to the detail and Harry's increasing panic that Karen's shopping nearby would return and see and all this. So if we recap the scene, right, Harry is buying a necklace for a woman who is not his wife because he's planning to sleep with her, upon which he will present her with the necklace. Any humour, I put, in this scene is rooted in Harry's desperation to get the necklace wrapped and in his pocket before Karen comes home. Which means any humour in this scene depends on us rooting for Harry to succeed with his infidelity against the twin obstacles of the irksome clerk and the big, bad, clueless wife.
Ooh. I do see what you're saying, because I remember thinking, like, it's kind of funny, but it's also kind of horrible at the same time, because you know what he's up to. He doesn't actually sleep with her, does he?
No. I can't recall. But that was the intention.
But the intention was there.
Okay. So now moving on to your cross-examination questions.
Yeah, I wrote quite
Have you got them?
Right. Going to ask you, I want to ask about Liam Neeson. Now, I made 2 points of asking you about this. The Liam Neeson storyline.
Liam Neeson.
Mm. And he's got a big knob.
Just that I put that in there. Yeah. As that is a fact, and we are in a court of law.
And I just want you to... probably the most cringeworthy bits of the film I'm going to put for me are Liam Neeson and his son. I just want you to defend all that bit, because I found that kid really creepy. I'm sorry, he was like a child actor grown in a test tube. And right, and the whole bit with it, right, is Liam's character's wife is freshly dead at the beginning of the movie.
Freshly dead?
Yeah, she's newly dead at the beginning of the film,
okay.
Isn't she?
Right, okay.
But at the end of the movie, which is 5 weeks have lapsed, he's making goo-goo eyes at Claudia Schiffer and that, and all the advice to his son. Just that whole bit, just please defend it.
Okay.
Change my opinion.
Okay, so going backwards to... I'm going to go from the end of the film to the front of the film, defending it. So gave you an opportunity to put Claudia Schiffer in the film. Bosh, basically.
Yeah.
I think I really liked the relationship he had with his stepson, because he was quite patient with him, and his stepson was in love, and it allowed the stepson to do that great thing where he was jumping over barriers at the end of the airport and all that kind of thing. And that was a big crescendo with lots of chimey music. The little talk that they had on the bench, I thought, was very moving and lovely, and made us all remember our first loves. And I also thought that he played it rather well, like a grieving father. Emma Thompson, I don't know how they know each other in the film. It's never quite sort of shown, but Emma Thompson's in a couple of scenes kind of going, oh, you know, get over it, you big sod, or whatever. But I actually quite like that take on grief, because a lot of people are always so sort of tippy-toey around people that are grieving, and often a little bit of humour injected into someone's life when they're heavily grieving is quite good. So I thought it was quite a good way of going, oh, hey, you know, it's all right to kind of kid and joke around people who are grieving, you know, to an extent, obviously, the people that are close to you. So that's, I would say that's probably my defence on your cross-examinations now.
Okay, Neil, do you have another question?
Yes.
Good.
Yes, sorry. I do. Justification of this movie, right? How can we justify coming of every September they start showing this film on usually ITV2, isn't it? It's continuously showed in readiness for Christmas. I mean, if it was a great holiday film, if you were to put a great holiday film at that time, surely It's a Wonderful Life would be a better one to put on. And they do show it a hell of a lot coming up to Christmas when more classics are deserving. Argue, please.
I would argue that it is a classic, and it's quickly becoming a classic. It's 10 years old and it's still as relevant as it was 10 years ago. It hasn't really aged, to be honest with you, I don't think. I watched it just after Christmas this year. I hadn't watched it for a long, long time, and still laughed at the right places, still cried at the right places, and made me feel physically like brilliant afterwards. I remember even posting on my Facebook, just remembered how absolutely brilliant this film is. And I think if you have a physiological reaction to a film, then it definitely is going to become a classic. So I think in 20 years' time, Love Actually is going to be like A Wonderful Life.
That's a bold statement.
I don't know why everyone goes on about A Wonderful Life. I'm not that much of a fan, to be honest.
Oh, maybe you need to come in and prosecute again. Yeah, maybe it's I a Wonderful will. Life. That would be an interesting podcast. So just out of interest, yes. You said that you've probably seen that film 20 times or yeah. Whatever. Is there a particular time of the year that you will watch it? Or is there a particular mood that you're in, or a particular moment where you feel, I'm going to watch that film?
No, not really. Maybe if I need a bit of cheering up, I'll always put it on. I don't think of it necessarily as a Christmas film, actually, funnily enough. I know they always show it around Christmas time because it's obviously in the film, it's a run up to Christmas. But it's so good, and it's, you know, it tackles lots of different things other than just Christmas in it, that actually you can get away with playing it any time of the year, in my opinion. And I'm just always so bowled over with that cast. I mean, you've got, as you say, you've got Emma Thompson, Hugh Grant, Rowan Atkins, Anton Decker in it, Keira Knightley. You've got that bloke off Harry Potter. You've even got a little Joe Wiley bit in there, haven't you? And as we said, Claudia Schiffer. I mean, Mr. Darcy's in there. Like,
did you know that Claudia Schiffer got paid £200,000 for her part in that
You're
film?
You're joking.
And I think she was there for a day, I believe.
God, give me the producer's number. I'd go and do it for like a whole year.
There you go.
Talking of the cast, Andrew Lincoln's in it, right?
That's right.
I have worked with Andrew Lincoln on a film. So when I was at university, I was a runner on a film called These Foolish Things, starring Andrew Lincoln, Lauren Bacall, Angelica Houston and Julia Taylor-Stanley. Completely bombed, but it was filmed in Bristol and in Cheltenham. And yeah, I was his runner. There you go.
What a name dropper you are.
I am.
So just, and I bow down to that.
I was going to say, use your thing and see if we can get him to come in the shed, because he lives locally.
But can I just say, more than Andrew Lincoln, Lauren Bacall,
I know.
Did you meet any of these?
Yeah, I met them all.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
They were proper, like, it was a proper feature film that they were filming. And a good friend of mine, Kay Ransom, got me the gig working alongside them. I wasn't mentioned on the credits because I didn't do enough days.
Oh,
I was at uni, you know, it was just right. One of those things. But it was a brilliant experience, absolutely brilliant. But yeah, unfortunately, the film bombed just a little bit. I probably
totally digressing. What was Lauren Bacall like?
Did you get to meet her a lot?
Oh, was she?
I went and had to, on her last day of filming, had to go and clear out her trailer. She had an awful lot of very expensive cosmetics in there.
Right.
But no, she was, I mean, they were all lovely from what I remember. It's a long time ago.
There you go. Look, she's doing it again. Look, she's playing. The jury are going to be so impressed that she knows Lauren Bacall. That's it. She's played with the heartstrings.
I wouldn't say I know her. It's not like I go, hey, Lauren, Loza, how you doing?
But the way I'm looking at it, you see, is with the 6 degrees of separation, we know somebody that knows Lauren Bacall. So that's good enough for me. Even the prosecution.
Yeah.
There, look, he's dazed. And
but
confused.
We digressed.
We have digressed.
But with the cast, I will give you, and I'm hand on heart, as I said earlier, gonna happily give Bill Nighy over as being great. And if you noticed, I have not said, and I will not say anything about his parts because they did actually make me
laugh.
And
isn't it brilliant at the end where he admits to his mate, "I love you."
Yeah,
I love that.
Isn't that
brilliant that men can show affection? It's not in a gay way either. I just thought it was brilliant. Yeah.
So I'm not going to.
Yeah, right.
That's not in my prosecution because I will hand on heart say to all that there's nothing to moan about Bill Nighy's parts.
Okay, right. We shall move on to our closing statements.
Right,
and we shall go again to the defence.
Me first.
We shall deal with you first, Laura.
All right then. So essentially, what other film has a marriage, a funeral, new love, old loves, an affair, choosing family over loves, a stepson relationship after grieving a mother that's died, two people that learn each other's languages, Colin getting it on in a porn setting. You know, what other film would have all these different storylines going on with Emma Thompson making you cry, Martin Freeman jumping off some steps, sea creatures in limos saying, "We're here," Carol singing at the door. You know, what other movie could do all those things and have the word fuck so many times? I mean, it's just the ultimate feel-good film for me. One of my favourite bits is right at the beginning where with the airport, where all those, you know, scenes of everybody kissing and greeting each other. And I just think Love Actually is all around.
There you go. And do you rest your case?
Yeah, I think I do. I rest my case. And whatever this one's about to say, I've got a reason why it's wrong.
Em's fighting words. So on to the prosecution. Neil,
right.
Your closing statements, please, to round off your case.
Hopefully what I've said has been coherent. And all I need to say about this film,
right?
And I will leave you with this fact, is this really the best rom-com holiday film? Air comments, all right? When it spawned other films now in this sort of genre, like The Holiday and Valentine's Day and New Year's Day and those sort of things, I think we can say it spawned those. When we have other films in this realm, like It's a Wonderful Life, Harry Met Sally, Annie Hall. Now, if after watching those you still prefer Love Actually, then all I can say is, I suppose you deserve Love Actually.
And is that your closing statement, Neil? Do you rest your case?
I rest my case.
Right. Well, there you go, pancasters. We have had the case for the prosecution, air quotes and everything, the case for the defence. So it now just leaves for you to now give us your verdict. So please get in touch with us by email, pancast@live.com, or by Facebook, or by Twitter. Twitter, we're at pancastpods. And please let us know. You are the jury. You will give us the verdict. And we will give you the verdict when we come to the next Pancast Movie Court, which will be sometime in the future. So it just leaves me to say thank you very much for the defence, Laura.
Thank you. Can I say one last thing?
Of course you can.
If you dislike this film, it means you dislike love. And if you don't love, you don't live. And if you don't live, you'd be dead.
I'm going to cry. And now Neil has to follow that. It's a goodbye from Neil.
I will just say there is better films about love to show that you can love. You don't need to like this.
There you go. Let's just say that and say that the court is now adjourned before there's fisticuffs. And I just want one more of those.
And he's got a big
and one more of those.
I really fancy Patrick Swayze.
Thank you very much. That was Pancast Movie Court. And we will see you for the verdict and for another guest next time.
Is sponsored by the Academy of Music and Science Swindon. For more information, go to www.academyofmusic.ac.uk.